2 Chronicles 33, verses 1 through 9. This is not a happy story. Manasseh was 12 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 55 years in Jerusalem. And he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, according to the abominations of the nations whom the Lord drove out before the people of Israel. For he rebuilt the high places that his father Hezekiah had broken down, and he erected altars to the Baals and made Asherahs and worshipped all the host of heaven and served them. And he built altars in the house of the Lord, of which the Lord had said, "In Jerusalem shall my name be forever." And he built altars for all the host of heaven in the two courts of the house of the Lord. And he burned his sons as an offering in the valley of the son of Hinnom, and used fortune-telling and omens and sorcery, and dealt with mediums and with necromancers, which are kind of like guys that like to read their horoscopes and stuff like that. He did much evil in the sight of the Lord, provoking him to anger. And the carved image of the idol that he had made, he set in the house of God, of which God had said to David and to Solomon his son, "In this house and in Jerusalem, which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel, I will put my name forever, and I will no more remove the foot of Israel from the land that I appointed for your fathers, if only they will be careful to do all that I have commanded them, all the law, all the statutes, and the rules given through Moses." Manasseh led Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem astray to do more evil than the nations whom the Lord destroyed before the people of Israel. But there's hope.
Thanks, Kathy, for reading and for the commentary. Sometimes you read stories like this, you think, what in the world is going on? And Kathy, thanks for reading that story, and she's right. It's not a happy story, but it's a good story. And it does have an interesting twist, but let's work our way up towards that. So Kathy has read for us the center of the history of the people of God. In fact, if we were to back up a bit in the story of the people of God, go back to 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel chapter 8 is a turning point, a hinge point in the history of the people of God. Up to that point, the people of God had lived under the direction of prophets. They would have, God would anoint a man, raise up a man who would be a mouthpiece, a spokesperson for God. That person would bring to the people the message and the instruction of God. But in 1 Samuel chapter 8, something happens in the history of the people of God. And they, kind of looking at the world around them, looking at the nations around them, get a little, they get quite upset that they were so different from the world around them. In fact, they come and they speak to Samuel and they say, "We want to have a king just like all the other nations around us." And Samuel, brokenhearted, takes this request to the Lord. And God says to Samuel, "It's okay, Samuel. It's not you that they're rejecting, but it's me." He says, "So just listen to their voice. Go ahead and give them what they want." And so, in response to their begging, their pleading, their demanding, God relents and he allows a king to be put in place. And really, as you read that, the people say, "Because we want him to kind of do our battles. We want to sit back and watch TV while he goes out and fights all of our battles for us." And it becomes a turning point, and not a good turning point, in the history of the people of God. As you continue through their story, through the books of 1 and 2 Samuel, you come into the books of 1 and 2 Kings, you start to understand, you start to get a view, a vision into what's going on with the people as they, step by step, and sometimes in quantum leaps, run in the wrong direction as a people from the presence of God. The books of 1 and 2 Kings tell the story of how the nation, under the direction of kings, either did okay, or more likely, most likely, they did not do so well. They ran in the wrong direction. But diving again into some of that history, not going into all of the kings that went before them, let me just give you a couple pointers. Under Samuel, the first king that's appointed was Saul. Saul starts out good. He has the anointing of God, but his heart is proud, and he fails. And God raises up in his stead David, of whom God said, he has a heart like unto my own. And David, having lived before the presence of God and messing up a bit, but God's hand was upon him, hands over the kingdom to Solomon, who also starts out very good with the anointing of God, but he too fails. Pride wells up, and his position gets to him, to where finally under his son, the single group of the people of God, all of Israel, splits. And they become, from that point forward, they become two pieces of a larger group. The group living up in the northern part of the country called Israel, and the group living in the southern part of the country now called Judah. And the stories, as you go through 1 Kings and 2 Kings, and then a retelling of their stories in 1 and 2 Chronicles, we see how these men usually failed miserably. But not always. In the northern kingdom, the kingdom of Israel, every single king that rose up did evil in the sight of God. How'd you like to have that history written over your nation, that this nation, from the time that it was birthed, that it came forth, lived in rebellion and only did evil all of its days in the sight of God? In the southern kingdom, they fared a bit better, and there was a sprinkling of good, godly kings interwoven in the stories of many that failed. First Kings giving us the story of these kings, and then First Chronicles and Second Chronicles retells those stories with a slight twist. The nation in the northern part of the country, Israel, spinning away from God, ultimately comes under his judgment, and God allows the nation of Assyria to come in and to take them away. And once they're removed from their position, we never hear of them again. Judah, looking to its northern sister, should have learned the lesson. And while it might have been a half step behind Israel, Judah still, in like ways, followed the leader in the wrong direction. But not every king in the southern part failed. And in fact, in 2 Chronicles, in the retelling, 2 Chronicles chapter 25, it tells us of Amaziah, who was 25 years old when he came to power, and he reigned for 29 years. Amaziah, 2 Chronicles chapter 25. It tells us of Amaziah, it says, and he did right in the sight of the Lord, but not with a whole heart. That in most ways, in most places, he did okay, as far as stirring the people towards God and giving them a reasonable example of what walking with God looked like. In 2 Chronicles 25, verse 14, it says, and he brought the gods of the sons of Seir and set them up as his gods. He bowed down to them and burned incense to them. So the one point being there that if you allow one piece of the world into your heart, more likely than not, that piece, that one part, will pull you in the wrong direction. Many times you see bottled water, pure water, coming out of the mountains of whatever. Joan and I had the opportunity recently to go to Alaska. And they had, in a few places, they had water pouring out of the sides of the mountain, coming from the glaciers and the snowfall. And they actually had a few places where people would stop on the side of the road and fill up their water bottles because the water was so pure. Now if they had a little sign next to that water and said 99.99% pure, 0.01% toilet water, how many people would go and drink it? None of us. And yet what the message of God tells us is that if there's 0.0001% of the world pulling at your heart, if we don't deal with it, it will ultimately pull us in the wrong direction. And so we see that in the life of Amaziah. We see in the life of Uzziah, 2 Chronicles 26. Uzziah comes to power when he's 16 years old and he reigns for 52 years. Not a bad life. How many people, I would have wanted to retire, you know, I'd look to the retirement plan, especially those that have ever worked for the government. Good retirement plans, huh? 52 years, he kept on going. Verse 2 Chronicles 26, verse 4 says, and he did right in the sight of the Lord. Verse 5 continues, and as long as he sought the Lord, God prospered him. But again, even Uzziah, as his life went on, verse 16 says, but when he became strong and the Lord's blessing was upon him, it said his heart was so proud that he acted corruptly, and he was unfaithful to the Lord, and he entered into the temple of God to burn incense on the altar of the Lord, and he became a leper. You find this over and over. Men that served God did a pretty good job at giving an example, a godly example to the people, but if their heart wasn't quite right, usually it worked against them and against the people. Now think about it. When you think about a king in the story of God, God wasn't worried. God doesn't tell us, wow, he did a great job at facilitating trade with all the other nations. It doesn't say that he created great roads for the country. From God's perspective, the heart of God is looking for men and women whose lives are given over to the kingdom of God, to the work of God. And when God decided to write the book of his story, what he did is he didn't write the history of kings and queens based on their alliances with other nations, based on how big the nation grew because they were so wise, even though it did at times, specifically I think of Solomon. God's view of their life was whether or not they were successful in pointing the people they led towards God. And as we read through it, in the midst of all these kings and all these stories, some that did okay, most of which failed miserably, we find the story that Kathy read to us. We find the story of Manasseh. His story, we first see it in the book of 2 Kings, chapter 20. And Kathy read for us some of the things of Manasseh. It says, 2 Kings 21, verse 2, 1 and 2, tells us his father Hezekiah, who was a godly ruler, mostly, dies, and Manasseh comes to rule at the age of 12. And he reigns for 55 years. 55 years he reigns. But it has attached to his story, it says, and he did evil in the sight of the Lord, according to the abominations of the nations the Lord dispossessed from before the sons of Israel. If you remember anything at all of the history of the people of God, when God brought them out of Egypt and was bringing them into the promised lands, one of their responsibilities was to execute the hand of judgment of God against those people because of their worship of idols, and very more so when that worship got full blown of these idols and it became child sacrifice and other abominations before God. God looked upon those atrocities and he allowed his called people to come in and purge the land of those atrocities, purge the land of that kind of ungodly worship. These people who were supposed to give a view into the God of the universe, the true living God, by hearts overflowing with love and devotion, by hearts given over completely to living in covenant relationship with him, God put a call upon him. Go in, you who are living in covenant relationship with me as my hand of judgment. Go into this nation, or into this place, into this land, and purge it of the sin and the pollution that has overwhelmed it from all these other nations that have been dwelling there. And we see later in their life that having been the hand of God to purge the land of that evil, now they're doing the exact same things that God purged, brought them into to get rid of. Now they're doing those things. And the story that we see of Manasseh is he's the leader. He's in charge. It says that he did evil according to all the abominations of these nations. It means that he was modeling his very life after what he had seen in those other nations. He was walking it out day by day in his own life. He was following, he adopted for himself not the principles of God, not the covenant that Moses gave them, but he adopted for himself the worst of the land. And he gave, not simply did he himself worship these things, he led his people into them. In fact, even worse so, he received from his father a nation that was more or less pointed towards the worship of God. And Manasseh comes into power and he reverses, he undoes everything that his father Hezekiah had brought about. It doesn't say that he was just bad, he was just a bad, he was a gambler, he was a drinker. He smoked a little bit, he drank a little bit. It doesn't even say he was a murderer or a rapist. In the mind of God, the worst, vilest thing was that he brought the worship of these gods into the land and led his people into these things. Not only did he reverse the things and adopt these practices for himself, he raised up high places of worship. Tells us that he raised up Asherah poles, which were really carved images and sometimes just tree groves that worshipped gods like Asherah and others. In fact, you know, we look at these things and we think these are just history books, stories. Believe it or not, there's actually a resurrection of the worship of these same gods. Even in Los Angeles and Miami recently, the carved poles, Asherah poles, have been set outside of places of business. And Manasseh, not only did he adopt these principles, not only did he lead the people of God away from the worship of God into these idolatrous practices, he did it face to face, confronting God. He actually went into the temple of God, replaced the worship of God with the worship of all these false gods, to the extent, as Kathy read for us, including child sacrifices. It says he made his children to go through the fire. In these days, they would build statues of bronze, hollow statues in which they could start and create fires, intense fires. And I want you to picture a statue 10 feet tall, hollowed out, where a fire is arranged inside so that the entire statue is glowing red hot. Arms outstretched, and they would take their children and lay it on the arms of that bronze image and sacrifice their children to their gods of pleasure or success, however they defined them. And these were the things that turned, that Hezekiah led them in. And as if that weren't enough, God, continuing in the indictment, says, you know, he's into witchcraft, he's into sorcery, he talks to dead people, he doesn't listen to me, he listens to them. And all of these things culminate to where it says in 2 Kings 21:6, he did much evil in the sight of the Lord, provoking him to anger. If you were to just pause there, just to let that absorb, the people of God living out these things, and he's the leader. And we all say, wow, that's really bad. In fact, it was. In fact, it tells us that God was provoked to anger so much to the place where God brought judgment. And following, just as he allowed judgment to fall upon Israel in the north, he allows judgment to fall upon the people of Judah under the leadership of Manasseh. It tells us that God allows judgment to come and for them to be led away. 2 Kings 21, verse 12. He did these things, and he made Judah sin. 2 Chronicles 33, verse 9, adding to that, says that thus Manasseh misled Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem to do more evil than the nations from whom the Lord destroyed before the sons of Israel. Pretty bad. How would you like God to write the story, to rewrite the scriptures today, issue a new version, updated version for the 21st century, and include your life? In my life. Not many of us would want to raise our hands and say, okay, God, you can use me. But of all the stories that are recorded for us, we find in the story of the people of God, this story of Manasseh. And as Kathy said, it's not a good story. Actually, I think the word that you used was not good, but a fun or happy. It's not a happy story. But it is. Because 1 and 2 Kings having been written first, and then 1 and 2 Chronicles being the reissue of them, written now after exile, basically to point out to the people where they failed at previously and how they could do better. 2 Chronicles retells the story of Manasseh, 2 Chronicles 33, but it adds for us some points that had been overlooked in the first writing, in the first telling in the book of Kings. And 2 Chronicles chapter 33, continuing the story of Manasseh, tells us in leading up to verse 12, 2 Chronicles 33, verse 9, thus Manasseh misled Judah and all the inhabitants to do more evil than all the nations. Verse 10, now I want you to see the grace of God in the midst of this story. Verse 10, and the Lord spoke to Manasseh and his people. Pause for just a moment. They're in high gear, running hard away from the presence of God. And God, as he has always done and continues to do, even as people are racing away, God's still speaking. God's still calling. God's still trying to bring correction. And here in the midst of the story, it says, God spoke to Manasseh, but they paid no attention. Therefore, the Lord brought the commanders of the army of the king of Assyria against them, and they captured Manasseh with hooks, bound him up with bronze chains, and led him away to Babylon. Yes, they used real hooks, like fish hooks. Through the ears, through the nose, chains around his hands, dragged him away to Babylon in judgment for all that he had done, in demonstration to all those peoples that they had displaced, now looking in upon them and seeing the same things. What would God have been saying if he would have allowed it to go? He couldn't. It was bad enough the first time around that he brought his people in. How bad do you think it was when his people are now doing it? So he brings them and now removes them from the land. And it tells us, first place of God's grace, God's speaking. And they rejected him. God allows them to be taken away in captivity. And here's the hinge point. 1 Kings, 2 Kings doesn't include this, but 2 Chronicles inserts us there to give us the fullness of the story. 2 Chronicles 33, verse 12. And when Manasseh was in distress. Yes, you're the king of the conquered nation, taken away in hooks and now a captive in a foreign nation. And when Manasseh was in distress, He entreated, he cried out to the Lord, his God. And he humbled himself greatly before the God of his fathers. Now, if we pause there for just let that soak in, it was by God, by the rebellion of their hearts, that God allowed them to be taken away. Even as they're running hard, God speaks. And now he allows them to be brought away to judgment. But there in that place, Manasseh's heart turns back towards God. And in the difficulty of his circumstance, he remembers the God of the covenant. It tells us that he knelt and he humbled himself before God, remembering the God of his fathers, and he calls out to God. You think that God used that place of judgment and correction to humble him? In fact, he did. In that place, we would look at it and we would see him being removed unto judgment, being taken away, and we'd say, well, that's the end. It's not the end. Because there, under those difficult circumstances, in the receiving of the payment of all that he had done, it says he humbled himself, verse 13, and when he prayed to God, God was moved by his cry and heard his supplication and brought him once again back to Jerusalem and to his kingdom. Then Manasseh knew that the Lord was God. At that place where he rightly received the payment for all of his sin, Manasseh humbles himself, kneels before God, and the God of the universe hears his cry, redeems him back from that place. The story continues, and I encourage you to read it, 2 Chronicles 33, because God restores him back to Jerusalem, and under his leadership, all those high places that he allowed to be set up are torn down. And the worship of God is restored back to the people of Jerusalem. Did they follow? Not really. Nope. But at least he tried. His heart was turned again. Want to know the extent to which God's grace is awesome in your life and my life? Have you been like Manasseh? Do you know anyone that's like Manasseh? Do you know anyone that you think God can never reach that person? You know what? There's no one that has gone so far away from the presence of God that God cannot touch them in the midst of their difficulty, in the midst of their struggles, and turn their hearts back. He did it for Manasseh. He can do it for you. He can do it for me. He can do it for your brother, for your sister, for your neighbor, for your cousin. For everyone that has ever offended you, he is at work in their lives and in their circumstances. Today, we're going to take communion really as a reminder that you and I also are part of that same grace of God. In fact, if you were to go to the book of Matthew as it gives us the lineage of Jesus Christ, guess who's listed in the lineage of Jesus Christ? Manasseh. Manasseh. Include it as one of the grandfathers, great-grandfathers, great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather of Jesus Christ. That's our God. And that God is the one that has invited us, you and me, to come to his table today.